Has joined.
Larry Vaughn.
Has joined.
Good afternoon. This is the hearing officer, Lincoln Strawn. And the hearing obviously has not started yet, but we have a few folks on the line. And so before it starts, I just want to do my best to figure out who is calling from which line. So I heard Mr. Larry Vaughn announce himself. Is that correct, Mr. Vaughn? And I understand you're a witness.
Yes. Yes, it's Larry Vaughn.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hearing Officer, this is Chris Gozo with the Idaho Department of Lands. I've got our conferences joined together.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot, Chris. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm just in... Was there anything else you needed to tell me at this point? Otherwise, I'm going to mute your line now.
I don't think so. I think that's it. And okay. I'll keep the email handy in case we've got any issues.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks.
Okay. And so we had a couple more folks just join the line. So I announced Larry Vaughn. He's a witness appearing for the hearing. If I have not called your name yet, if you could please announce yourself.
Joy Vega, Deputy Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Idaho Department of Lands.
Thank you, Ms. Vega. And is there anyone on the line with you?
There's no one physically with me. However, I do know that both Mick Thomas and James Thum will be participating from their own line today.
From their own line. Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Vega. And then I see one more line open. If you could please announce yourself.
Sure. It's Christina Fugate. I'm the Deputy Attorney General who's advisory attorney to the Oil and Gas Commission in this matter, and I'm just listening in. I'm not appearing or participating because the commission
James
is the final decision maker.
Has joined.
Michael Cochran.
Has joined.
Okay. Thank you. Stand by just a moment, Ms. Fugate. I heard Mr. Piotrowski and Mr. Christian join us. So what I'm doing now, obviously the hearing has not started yet. I'm just making note of who is calling from what line while people are calling in so I can get that straight. So I believe Mr. Piotrowski called in just a moment before Mr. Christian. Mr. Piotrowski, could you just confirm you're on the line so I can see what line you're calling from?
Yes, I am here.
All right. Thank you so much. Just making a note of that. And I believe it's your witness, Larry Vaughn, called in just a few minutes ago, so he is on the line, obviously a separate line from you. Are all of your witnesses planning to call on separate lines, or are some calling on the line you're calling from?
Yeah, they're all calling on separate lines.
Has left.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. All right, and then I believe that our next line is Mr. Christian. If you could just announce yourself so I know which line you're calling from.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, thank you. And same question as to Mr. Piotrowski is, are your witnesses calling in separately or are they on the line with you?
Separately.
Separately, gotcha. Okay, thank you. All right, okay, and so when both Mr. Piotrowski and Mr. Christian called in, I was talking
James
to Ms. Fugate.
Has joined.
And just heard Mr. James Thum join us, so I got that. Mr. Thum, this is Lincoln Strawn, the hearing officer, and I'm just going through the lines to make sure I understand everyone who is on the line. So, Ms. Fugate, I was addressing you, and we got additional callers on. So, you said you would just be listening in and observing for the Idaho Department of Lands. It's not an issue at this point, but we only have so many ports on our telephone system. And so
Martin Bilbao, Bilbao and Company.
Has joined.
Nate Fisher.
Has joined.
And so I'm hoping we'll have enough ports, but if not, I may ask you to call an alternative conference line number. And it's for people that are just listening in and do not plan to participate in the hearing, and that's provided by the Department of Lands. And I'll announce that phone number when the hearing starts. So just to give you a heads up on that, Ms. Fugate, okay?
Yeah, sounds good, Mr. Sean. And again, I'm the advisory attorney for the Oil and Gas Commission, not Department of Lands.
I'm
happy to just call that number now if that works for
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Just to avoid any potential hiccups with our phone system. And so I know a few more
Dave
callers have called
Lochner
us.
Dave Lochner
has joined.
And so anyone on the line listening now, we are at our start time of 1 o'clock, and so this is a scheduled hearing in the matter of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission regarding the issue of determining whether the integration order in docket number CC 2016-ODR-01001 applies to the permitted proposed Barlow number 214 well. And so, again, my name is Lincoln Straw. I'm the hearing officer assigned to this matter. And so people have been calling in as early as 10 minutes before the start time. And from the system that I have here, the system we use for these hearings, I can write the name down of basically who is calling from what line. And so I've been trying to get a hold of that before we started the hearing so I could – we wouldn't have to waste time doing that once the hearing has started. So let me just announce that there is a conference number that people can call if we run out of ports on our system, and that number is 877-820-7831. And you call that number, and you put in the code 146-275. And that will let you listen to the hearing. The line is muted, so this is for anyone who's not planning to participate on the hearing, although I plan at the end of the hearing to unmute that line in case there's any public comments or if there's any parties that we're not able
Martin
to.
Martin Bilbao, Bilbao and Company.
Has left.
That we're going to participate. And so what I'd like to do now is just finish going through the lines. There's about five lines that I'm not sure who is on those, and I want to make sure I understand so when it's time for witness testimony shortly that we'll be able to get them in and get started. So appreciate everyone's patience just as we get through this, and we'll start momentarily. So let's do this. If I have not called your name yet. So here's who I have so far. So I have witness Larry Vaughn. I have the conference number that I mentioned. I have Ms. Joy Vega from the Department of Lands, Mr. Piotrowski, attorney Mr. Christian. We have Mr. Thumb. And then after that, we have some lines that I have not called yet. So if you called in after Mr. Thumb, if you would please announce yourself, and it may take us a few moments to sort through, but if I have not called your name, if you could please announce yourself now.
Judy Irene Shaver.
Thank you, Ms. Shaver, and so got you. Okay, next.
Mel Person.
Okay, and next.
Dave Lochner.
Okay, and next?
Nate Fisher. And Lincoln, I'll plan on just calling into that muted line. Could you confirm the number for me one more time?
Yes, of course. So that number is 877-820-7831. And when it asks you for a code, you put in 146-275.
Perfect. I am going to leave this call here now, so it'll play that recording. But thanks.
All right. Thank you. Okay, and then so I show one more person on the line. If you could please announce yourself. Okay, if I have not called your name, please announce yourself.
Richard Brown.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Okay. And just so I'm clear of who's who, I'll start with you, Mr. Brown. Are you calling in as a witness or interested party, or what's your participation in this hearing today?
Both.
Okay. Thank you. Same question for Dave Lochner. What is your participation for the hearing today?
Witness.
Thank you. And Mel Person, same question to you. Are you a witness as well, or just a party?
A witness, yes. A witness.
Thank you. And Ms. Irene Shaver, same question for you. Are you a witness or participant?
Megan Thomas.
Has joined.
A witness, thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you. And then sounds like Mr. Mick Thomas just joined us, and have him down as a witness. Okay. And Mr. Thomas, we were just going through preliminary items and basically me making sure I understand everyone who is on the line here. So as of now, everyone is accounted for, so we can move things along. Again, I appreciate everyone's patience. And so for our phone system, it doesn't happen very often, but occasionally a line will be dropped. And if that happens to anyone on the line, just call right back with the same phone number and same conference ID number, and we'll pick up where we left off. And so I trust everyone received the notice that we sent yesterday, just giving the receipt of the motion of Mr. Christian's pre-hearing motion. And then also we sent a notice basically listing the order, proposed order of how this hearing will work, so everyone is prepared. And so we'll go through that in just a moment. And I just wanted to say again for the record that this is a scheduled hearing in the matter of determining whether the integration order in docket number CC 2016-OGR-01001 applies to the permitted proposed Barlow number 214 well. And it's our case docket number 20-72167, and then also docket number CC 2020-OGR-01003. And so the date is March 19th, 2021, and the start time was 1 o'clock Mountain Time. And so this is the scheduled hearing date. If we are not able to finish today, we're planning to continue it tomorrow on March 10th at 9 a.m., and so in a moment, I'll call Mr. Piotrowski to call his witnesses. We do swear in witnesses on these hearings, and so before each witness will testify, I'll swear them in. And then after each witness has provided their testimony, then we will allow for questioning, cross-examination from any other interested party on the line. So that's pretty much it for the preliminary items. I'm just admitting the exhibits that were sent to me. Idaho Department of Lands submitted a timeline and kind of a case summary, an applicable law, and so I'm admitting their exhibit. Obviously, I'm admitting the motion that was filed by Mr. Christian on behalf of Snake River, and then as well as all the other procedural documents that were in Exhibit A for Snake River are admitted as well. And so I listed on our schedule, if anyone wants to make opening statements, you're not required to, but I want to give everyone a chance to do that before we get to testimony. So if there's nothing pressing that we need to take care of first, then we'll go ahead and have opening statements. But I want to make sure everyone is ready to go. Mr. Piotrowski, I'll start with you. Are there any issues or matters that we need to cover before we can get into opening statements and testimony and arguments?
No, sir, not that I'm aware of.
Gotcha. Thanks. Mr. Christian, same question for you. Anything we need to cover before we get started?
Thank you, sir. I only had two items. One was the 2016 integration order is posted to the docket in the case. Nobody, I don't think, has made it an exhibit as part of their submittals. Likewise, the commission's order granting the permit to drill for the Barlow 214 well. And my suggestion is that as a procedural matter that you ought to take official notice of both.
Yes, and thank you for that. And so, yes, I take official notice of both of those documents, and they are part of the record here.
Okay, thank you. And then the other thing, the only other point I had was in your order of proceedings, you listed the commission as presenting argument and testimony, it doesn't sound like, given that Ms. Fugate has gone off to the other line, that they will, but I have a concern about that, about the commission participating in that way, given that they are, I think, ultimately the appellate body, should anybody appeal your order.
Right, and that's a good point as well. Ms. Vega, do you have any comments on that?
Thank you, Mr. Strawn. I would agree with Mr. Christian. I'm not going to try to speak for Ms. Fugate, but the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is the appellate body to this proceeding. And as I guess as Ms. Fugate said, she was not planning to participate on behalf of the commission. So I don't know that there's anybody prepared or available to participate in that way, even if they wanted to.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. And so thank you for that clarification. And so yes, so we'll identify the Idaho Oil and Gas Conservation Commission as the appellate body and don't expect their participation in this hearing today. Okay. Was there anything else, Mr. Christian?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. We'll, at this point then, and I'm sorry, Ms. Vega, was there anything else you wanted to cover or thought we needed to cover before we get started?
No, nothing more. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, with that in mind, I'd like to offer the chance for parties to make opening statements. And again, you're not required to. This is just voluntarily if you want to. And Mr. Piotrowski, we'll start with you if you would like to make an opening statement.
Sure. I'd be happy to provide a very brief opening. The Idaho Oil and Gas Conservation Act has been amended repeatedly in the last 5+ years. The regulations arising under that act have been amended repeatedly over the same approximate time frame of 5 to 8 years. The law of the United States clearly requires that before the state may assign somebody's mineral rights to somebody else, due process of law must be observed. There is no longer any question, although there was there was arguably a question until a year or two ago, as to whether mineral rights constituted a property right in Idaho, or at least the department was unclear or was taking the position that they weren't. At this point, we know that mineral rights are a property right in Idaho, and it's somewhat amazing that the state of Idaho ever took a contrary position, but that matter is now cleared up as a matter of law. And it is also clear that the procedures in place in 2016 were, first of all, not adequate to meet the procedures that would be required today for entry of an immigration order. And second, those procedures are entirely inadequate to meet the requirements of the law across America. And so we're dealing here with an immigration order that was entered at a time and under express notice to mineral rights owners that one well was being contemplated to access their mineral rights. And that hearing was held, that immigration order was entered, and some many years later, Snake River Oil and Gas, who never participated in that process at all, is now claiming with that same immigration order permits it to drill a second well under the same terms and conditions, terms and conditions that were never evaluated as to whether they were just and reasonable to mineral rights holders. If the state proceeds to find that this immigration order applies, it will do so in direct contravention of a standing order of the United States District Court for the District of Idaho and in direct contravention of the United States Constitution. The state of Idaho should be taking the position to protect the constitutional rights of its citizens rather than taking the position that the oil and gas company wants it to take, which is that oil and gas trumps everything, including the Constitution. Our witnesses today will describe the reality that they didn't participate in the procedures in 2016 because they had no idea what those procedures meant. And that as a result, an immigration order was entered that was likely illegal at the time, and now SROG, Snake River Oil and Gas, seeks to further extend that integration order that it was never a part of until it bought the assets of a bankrupt corporation. At the end, I expect the hearing officer is going to conclude that he doesn't have the authority to rule on what the Constitution requires. I respectfully submit the hearing officer is wrong. It is your job to decide what the law is. And that includes constitutional provisions. You must decide what the law is and then help the Oil and Gas Commission correctly apply that law to the set of facts before it. I hope you'll do so, but I expect the hearing today will be relatively brief because the issue really is primarily one of law and only to a limited extent one of fact. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Piotrowski. Mr. Christian, same option to you if you would like to make an opening statement.
Thank you, sir. I'll try to keep it brief. I agree with Mr. Piotrowski that this matter is largely one of law and not one of fact. However, virtually everything else he said is outside the scope of the commission's order initiating this contested case. I've argued it in my motion, and I'll argue more later when we get to closing statements. But the commission's notice of initiation of this case said the purpose of this case is solely to determine whether the integration order in docket number CC 2016 OGR 01001 applies to the permitted proposed Barlow 214 well. That is the entire scope of the proceeding, and anything outside of that is irrelevant. Mr. Piotrowski's goal appears to be to relitigate the 2016 integration order, and that's not the purpose of this case. I will argue at more length later, but per the discussion in our motion, Snake River's position is that the statute is very clear that integration orders, absent some express limitation, are not limited to one well, coverage of one well. The integration order that was entered in 2016 contains no such limitation. I take issue with Mr. Piotrowski's characterization of the facts that mineral owners were given what he called express notice that there would only be one well in the unit. That's nowhere in the application materials. And lastly, the order that the commission entered when it granted Snake River the permit to drill the Barlow 214 well contains statements in it which clearly recognize the coverage of that well by the 2016 integration order, and statements which could not have been made otherwise. So at the conclusion of this hearing, we will ask the hearing officer to enter an order recognizing that the 2016 integration order does in fact apply to the Barlow 214 well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Christian. Ms. Vega, did you have an opening statement you wanted to make for Department of Lands?
Thank you, Mr. Strawn. The oil and gas program of the Idaho Department of Lands serves as the administrative arm of the Idaho Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. To that end, the commission has issued its orders that are available to you. And as such, the Department of Lands is participating as a neutral party and is not making any recommendation or argument as to the outcome of this proceeding. Instead, the Idaho Department of Land witnesses who have been noticed are available to provide any technical information to assist in your understanding of the, the geological formations or whatever other information you might need in order to grasp and fully understand the issues and technicalities before you. To that end, the department did offer, as you have admitted, the IDL Exhibit 1, which really speaks to the factual background that leads us to today, as well as the versions of the Idaho Code and the IDAPA rules that apply to the integration order before you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Vega. All right. Well, with that in mind, let's go ahead and get to testimony. And so, Mr. Piotrowski, you can call your first witness, or if you wanted to expand on your arguments, you can basically present the case for Citizens Allied for Integrity and Accountability at this time.
Thank you, sir. To be clear, my client and the parties I represent in this matter are Kaya and each of its members that are listed individually, as well as any and all members reside in the facing unit. I don't want to leave the perception that I am representing solely Kaya. We have received numerous letters from people supporting SROG, accusing us of being outsiders with no business in this, and yet the witnesses on this call and the parties I represent live in Payette County in Fruitland, Idaho, unlike others. So I just want to be clear who my clients are here, that they are locals, that they are affected by this proceeding. With that, we would call first Mel Person.
All right. Mel Person, right, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth today?
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead and proceed.
Mr. Person, could you go ahead and state your full name, please?
My full name is Melvin N. Person.
Where do you live, Mr. Person? What's your address?
I live at 2146
James,
Northeast 16th Street in Fruitland.
I'm sorry, sir. We had I got 2146, and then there was an interruption.
Okay. Northeast 16th Street in Fruitland, Idaho.
Okay. And are you familiar with the integration order that covers, that allows and covers extraction from what's been designated as the Barlow 114 well?
I know of it. I have a long history with it back to 2015, I believe, but not sure that I ever completely understood the whole thing, but I am aware of it and what it does and what it's supposed to do, I guess, so.
And does it apply, and did it by its terms apply to your property?
It did. We were, we were in the section where the Barlow well was drilled, so we were in section 14.
Okay. How long have you lived at your home in Fruitland?
I grew up at my folks' place, which is right next door, and then we built this house that we're living in about 30 years ago. So I'm 68 years old, and I've lived in this area for 55 of those 68 years at least.
When you first heard that there might be, let me ask this. How did you first hear that there might be oil or gas drilling in your neighborhood?
Well, I heard the rumor, probably I can't remember exactly who I heard it from, but one of my neighbors, that there was a possibility that there, you know, would be some gas and oil drilling. And then when we first knew for sure that was maybe going to happen was we were approached by a young man who wanted to go through our property to set up some seismic testing, you know, tools of some kind. And talked to him, and he said they were just doing some preliminary work to see if there was, you know, gas and oil under the property here. So that's the first time we heard that it was maybe going to happen.
Okay. To your recollection, have you ever signed a lease to allowing any other person or company to extract and sell the oil or gas under your property?
No.
Back in 2016, there was a proceeding that went on following what's called an integration application, and that actually resulted in a hearing somewhat similar to this one. Did you participate in that hearing?
I was at a hearing at the Department of Lands. That was, I couldn't tell you the exact date, and I did testify at that. I'm not sure if that's the one you're speaking of. Other than that, I went to several meetings where they were discussing the integration order and how that was going to work. And occasionally I would talk, but not you know, formally giving testimony like I am now, just, you know, a few comments. So in answer to your question, I guess at that Department of Lands meeting in Boise that I did attend and I guess testify, gave testimony, you know, gave my opinion, I guess that would be the only one that, no, but I'm not sure if that's the one you're talking about, so.
Okay. When you learned that there was somebody interested in drilling a well, an oil and gas well, near your property, did you have any concerns about that?
Oh, yeah, obviously. I had lots of questions. And we had a couple different times we had people come to the door. We would talk to them and ask, you know, lots of questions, and some we got answers to and some we didn't. But, yeah, initially we were and still do have a lot of questions, but we did at the outset.
Mr. Carson, are you by any chance employed as a lawyer?
No.
Okay. One of the statutes that's involved in integration orders requires that the leases for related to those orders have to have terms that are just and reasonable to mineral rights holders. Do you have any knowledge of what would constitute just and reasonable terms for such a lease?
No, I have an idea of what just and reasonable might be, and you know, for me, but I don't know in legal terms how that would, you know, how you'd write that up.
Okay. The concerns that you had back in 2016, do those remain concerns that you have today about oil and gas development on property near you?
Yeah, some, you know, there's some of those things have been answered, but I still have a lot of questions, and I'm still asking those questions of, you know, whoever I can get to talk to me. So, but they still remain. I can say that, you know, we're talking about legal descriptions of what just and reasonable is. I mean, we were given, like in 2016, about a 50 to 60 page document that was printed on both sides of the paper, so roughly 100 pages. We tried to read that. We had like a week to read it and object to it or give any recommendations and send it back. And I couldn't, you know, I'm an educated man, but I couldn't make heads or tails out of some of it. So I took it to a attorney friend of mine and said, hey, look at this and tell me what you think. And he said, man, that'd take some time to decipher that. So we kind of felt like, you know, we didn't understand the language, and so it was really hard to make a decision if you don't understand what's in the paper. And you don't have a lot of time to get that research done and get it back in, at least with that document we didn't.
Were you aware at the time that that document you're talking about was the very one that is required to be measured against a standard that is just and reasonable for you?
No, I had no idea about that. I knew it was an important document, but I didn't know for sure where we were in the process.
Tell me, did your concerns about the lease, did they include, well, rather than me telling you, well, I'll ask you, what are some of the concerns that you still have today that you think should be addressed in terms of the development of oil and gas under your property?
Well, the biggest concern, and the one that nobody's ever answered yet, and I've talked to a lot of people about this, but I want to know, as a property owner, if we lease our mineral rights and they, or if we don't, if we're forced pooled, either way that works, and then somebody drills a gas well and there's damage to neighboring properties because of that well, probably the most common, you know, concern would be, you know, drinking water, groundwater. We have a well here, and, you know, if the well goes bad, we're pretty much just sitting on farm ground. But so I've asked that question. I've asked and I've asked and I've asked it, and I've never gotten what I thought was a good answer to it. I want to know if something bad happens And we all know it's not going to happen until it happens, but when something bad happens, who's going to compensate neighboring property owners for loss of property value or for a cleanup or whatever it would take to rectify the situation? And I've never gotten a good answer to that question. So that would be number one on my list.
And did you ask those questions of either the Department of Lands or the Oil and Gas Commission back in 2016?
Yes. Yeah, I brought that up several times at several meetings I was at. And they talked about, well, there's, you know, there are bonds that whoever drills the wells are going to be bonded, and their insurance and the state of Idaho might help. But I never got anybody that said, okay, this is what's going to happen. If something bad happens, here's what's going to take place. It was all pretty vague, so certainly didn't satisfy me as an answer.
And did anyone ever inform you, either by just telling you or by pointing you to a statute or a regulation, did anyone ever inform you in any way that those were the kind of concerns that could be addressed under that broad heading of just and reasonable terms for leases?
No.
If you were told that those are the kinds of concerns that could be addressed through an integration procedure, would you be more likely to participate in that procedure?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I'm just giving it a moment. There's a sudden loud noise where I'm at. All right, Mr. Peirce, I think that's all the questions I have for you.
Okay, thank you.
But some of the other lawyers may have questions.
Okay.
Mr. Christian, did you have any questions for witness Mr. Person?
I do, sir. As a preface to it, I'll reiterate the objection that I stated in my opening statement about the scope of this proceeding and Mr. Piotrowski's questions to Mr. Person. While I appreciate his concerns, it seemed to me largely to be complaints about how the proceedings in 2016 were carried out, which isn't the scope of this proceeding. So I'd lodge that objection and generally ask that, you know, testimony that is outside the scope not be considered. Having said that, I'll ask Mr. Person some questions. Mr. Person, this is Mike Christian. I represent Snake River Oil and Gas. Good to meet you.
Okay.
Do I understand correctly that your address where you live is currently is inside Section 14?
Yes.
Okay. And how much property do you own in Section 14?
We own about a little over half an acre. I think it's 0.65 acres.
And how – do you know how far away you are from the Barlow well pad?
Oh, I could walk there pretty quickly. In a straight line, maybe 400 yards, 400 or 500 yards probably.
And you indicated that you had, in your testimony in response to Mr. Piotrowski's questions, that you had attended some meetings, but you weren't sure what they were. And you had spoken to IDL at some meetings, but you weren't sure what they were.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Let me finish my question.
Okay.
The commission's order at the conclusion of the 2016 integration application for Section 14, it states that written comments were submitted by Robert and Sue Bixby and by Luke Smith and Brenna Smith, but it doesn't list you.
Right.
Do you have any reason to disagree with that statement by the commission?
Well, that's the document that we received on We received, I can look it up here. I got it in my notes. We received that document on May 31st, 2016. We had until June 9th, 2016 to write down concerns, objections, or, you know, whatever that language was that they used. And so we figured it had to be in by then. I don't know if it just needed to be postmarked or not, but we had a week or so to get that done, and that's the document that I took around to a friend of mine that happens to be an attorney, and he said, man, I'd like to have to study this for a while. So we got kind of frustrated with that, and to object to something you're not sure you understand, I guess we could have sent in an objection that we don't understand the document, but we didn't do that. We just got frustrated with it. And, you know, we were told all along it doesn't matter whether you sign or not. You know, you're going to be force pulled, so you might as well sign. That was kind of the argument that was used early on in the process, and we felt that way. We just felt like we're pretty helpless to do anything here.
So you knew you had an opportunity to submit a written comment, but you didn't.
How can you submit a written comment to something you don't understand?
Okay, so the answer is you knew you had an opportunity to submit a written comment, and you didn't. Is that correct?
We did.
Objection compound.
You can answer my question, sir.
Objection. I'd like a ruling on it.
Okay. From my perspective, it sounded like he did answer the question, so I would respectfully ask Mr. Christian to move to the next question.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Person, you did not participate at the hearing of the application of the 2016 integration application, did you?
No. No.
Okay. And as I understand it, your concerns are primarily with whether protective measures are taken for property owners in the event of some sort of damage from the well. Is that correct?
That would be my number one concern. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I have any other questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Christian. Mr. Piotrowski, do you have any follow-ups for Mr. Person?
Yes, please. Mr. Person, you just testified that one of your primary concerns is whether there are protective measures for landowners. Are you also concerned about, you know, the scope and extent of those protection measures and whether they're adequate?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you've got somebody drilling wells and they're bonded and something happens, I mean, what are those bonds going to pay for? What's within the scope of the bond or the insurance, and what isn't going to be paid? What isn't part of that? And, you know, there's a lot of things involved there, but basically I think that as property owner, I just want to know that, you know, if something happens that damages or, you know, damages my property or hurts my property values and we've got a legitimate claim, that there's somewhere that we can be compensated for that, because, like I say, you know, a lot of things could happen. So,
thank you, sir. That was all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I just want to take a moment to note Mr. Christian's objection to testimony outside the scope. At this point, I'm allowing testimony. I do reserve the option to address objections in the recommended order of this hearing. But basically, I like to give parties and witnesses a chance to say what they need to say, and then I can determine in the order if that's something that bears on the decision-making or if it is outside the scope, and I can address that in the written order. But again, I like to have parties have a chance to say what they need to say. So with that being covered, Mr. Piotrowski, would you like to call your next witness?
Thank you. We would call David Lochner.
Okay. Mr. David Lochner, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth today?
I do.
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Lochner. Could you please state your full name for the record?
David G. Lochner.
And where do you live, Mr. Lochner?
Address is 2141 Locust Way, Fruitland, Idaho.
And do you know if that is in Section 14?
Yes, it's supposed to be.
Okay. And to your knowledge, is your property subject to the various orders that have been entered involving the Barlow 114 and Barlow 214 wells?
As far as I know, they are.
Okay.
Mr. Lochner, how long have you lived at that address?
Around 20 years.
And tell me, at any time, whether it was back, in 2015 or more recently, have you signed a lease of your mineral rights to Snake River Oil and Gas?
I have not.
Okay. How about to any other gas and oil company?
None that I know of.
Okay. Mr. Lochner, were you aware back in 2015 and 2016, that an oil and gas company was interested in drilling for natural gas near your property?
Yes.
And were you aware that there was a procedure that went on to determine whether your property would be integrated with others for purposes of establishing mineral rights leases?
Yes, we attended several public meetings back in that time, and basically my understanding was that, if you didn't sign, 55% of the property owners in your in this block signed, that you would just automatically be taken in or integrated.
Okay. And did you understand back at the time, back in 2016, that you could go to a hearing where you could argue about what were the terms that you would get locked into if that happened?
I did not.
Were you aware back in 2016 that the state of Idaho was supposed to make sure that the terms of any lease that you were pulled into would be just and reasonable?
I was assuming that the state, was taking care of it, and I think that's about the time they were forming this gas and oil to keep an eye on this.
And did you have any idea what that meant, what terms would be just and what terms would not be just, or what terms would be reasonable and what terms would be considered unreasonable? Did you have any idea about that back in 2016?
No.
Okay. Did you choose to participate in that integration hearing?
I did not.
And, sir, if you were aware, are you aware today that you have the opportunity in an integration procedure? Sorry, I'm trying to speak clearly here. Are you aware today that you would have the opportunity in such a procedure to argue for just and reasonable lease terms?
Yes.
If you were told, what constitutes just and what constitutes reasonable, would you choose to participate in such a procedure?
Yes.
Okay. When you, back in 2016, when the last process was going on, were you aware that under that same integration order that the oil and gas operator could continue to drill new wells rather than just the one well under your property?
I was not aware of that.
And tell me, did you, back in 2016 when this was going on, did you think there was going to be one well or did you think there were going to be multiple wells?
Well, we knew there was supposed to be a well off of States Boulevard, which is, within 500 or 600 yards of my house, and the Barlow well. But as far as anything else, no.
So did you have any indication or were you given any warning that there could be multiple wells on the Barlow's property?
No.
Thank you, sir. Those were all the questions I had.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Christian, did you have any questions for Mr. Lochner?
Yes, thank you, sir. Mr. Lochner, about how much acreage do you own in Section 14?
We're just under an acre here, I think 0.9.
And do you recall receiving the application for integration from the applicant back in 2016?
We received stacks of documents, and you know, people come into the house wanting you to sign.
You mean people who were attempting to enter into a lease agreement with you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall getting a notice of the hearing of the application?
I don't.
But you did not submit any written response to the application, I take it?
I did not.
And you did not attend or participate in the hearing on the application?
I did not.
Okay. And are you, you made a reference to Mr. Piotrowski about the time he was forming something to keep an eye on this. Are you referring to Kaya?
Well, I think Kaya, I don't know whether Kaya was formed at that point, but there were several public meetings here downtown Fruitland at the old high school, and that we attended.
Is that meetings of people who were opposed to oil and gas development?
Yeah. And,
Objection,
and,
foundation.
And getting information on it, the people that were leading these meetings were opposed to it.
Okay. Are you a member of Kaya now?
I am.
And it would be your desire that no more wells be drilled around you?
I'm not against oil and gas well. I'm glad that we're to be in, energy independent, but we also need to be protected if something would happen to the groundwater. There was also concerns about if you signed away your mineral leases, that if you had a mortgage, that could be affected. So basically, yeah, I think if they want to drill another well, we need to have the rules laid out as to what may happen if something happened to our wells, because we're all out of the city limits right here. So if something happened to the wells, basically we'd probably have to petition to be annexed into the city, and that could be pretty costly for us.
Have you read the integration order?
I have not. Not recently, anyway.
Have you read the oil and gas rules for the state of Idaho?
Objection. No. Relevance.
Okay. And
Mr. Lochner's clearly testified he's not a lawyer. Yeah, he's not pretending to know the rules. He's testified to his knowledge, his experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would basically agree. So, Mr. Christian, I would ask you to ask your next question.
Well, my point was Mr. Piotrowski hadn't testified that he had concerns and that he believes that now he should have the opportunity and others should have the opportunity to have another shot at an integration hearing because they're more educated now. And I
had objection. We're not talking about another shot at an integration hearing. Mr. Christian wants to characterize this in ways that support his own argument. We're taking evidence right now, not making legal arguments.
Mr. Hearing Officer, I would ask that you please request that Mr. Piotrowski not interrupt me when I'm speaking.
Okay. Yeah, and let's keep this orderly. I'll just say that there will be time at the end of the hearing for arguments. And right now it is a time to get testimony from the witnesses. And so there will be time for arguments later. So I would ask Mr. Christian if you would go ahead and ask your next question of Mr. Lochner.
I don't have any further questions, sir.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any, Mr. Piotrowski, did you have any follow-ups for Mr. Lochner?
No, sir. Nothing further.
Okay. And Ms. Vega, I didn't give you a chance to ask any questions of the witnesses based on your opening statement, but if there is something that you wanted to ask, just chime in and let me know, okay?
Thank you. I haven't had any questions for either. I don't have anticipate having questions for the others that might be called by Mr. Piotrowski, but I appreciate you checking in with me.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Piotrowski, if you would want to call your next witness.
Mr. Hearing Officer, if I might propose, the additional witnesses we listed if called, will offer testimony substantially similar to what we've already heard, that they didn't participate in the prior proceeding, that they did not understand what legal standards or factual standards might apply to that proceeding, but that they would like the opportunity to address the issues arising under the statute with respect to the new well. I'm happy to call them and put them on. I'm just offering, you know, with that proffer, perhaps we could just, you know, move on and not take the time.
Okay. Mr. Christian, do you have any thoughts on that?
I would stipulate the proffer subject to my objection that testimony is outside the scope of the contested case.
Okay. So noted. You know, again, I want to give folks a chance to say what they need to say. And so, you know, I'll leave it up to you, Mr. Piotrowski, if you want to call your next witness and have them testify, or if you want to move on.
We would submit that proffer of testimony. And in the interest of, you know, trying to limit this just to the question at issue, which is, you know, what we're going to do with the prior integration order and the new well, I think that's adequate. I mean, that's factually, that's our case. These witnesses did not understand the procedure prior. They'd like an opportunity to address it again. And that's, you know, factually, that's the extent of our case today. So I think with the proffer offered and accepted, we have no need to call those witnesses.
Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to say at this time on behalf of Kaya?
We have no further testimony to provide. We'll provide argument at the appropriate time.
Okay, thank you. So with that in mind, Mr. Christian, let's go ahead and move over to you and give you a chance to present your case on behalf of Snake River Oil and Gas. You can make arguments at this time, or if you wanted to call your witnesses, but you can go ahead and proceed when you're ready.
Thanks, sir. I'd call Richard Brown to testify.
Mr. Brown, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth today?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you.
Richard, can you just give us your full name and where you live for the record?
Richard Brown, and I am 61 years of age, and I currently live in Sun Valley, Idaho, and commute to Texas on business.
And you are you're one of the owners of Wiser Brown Oil Company?
Yes, I am.
And does Wiser Brown is Wiser Brown the member and owner of Snake River Oil and Gas?
Yes.
And as part of your involvement with Wiser Brown, first of all, how long have you been involved with Wiser Brown?
30-plus years.
And how can you tell me roughly how many states it has interest or operations in?
Eight.
And is that experience both as an operator and as a non-operating working interest owner?
Correct.
Okay. And
actually, we've owned working interest in more states than we've operated in. I think we've operated in five or six states.
Okay. And was Snake River one of the, well, ask in a different way. About when did Snake River start leasing in Idaho?
2010.
And did you direct that effort?
Yes, I did.
I know I've had you tell this story in the past, and I'll have you tell it again. What was the impetus for you to come to Idaho and lease mineral rights?
I heard about a discovery made in Idaho by a company by the name of Bridge Resources on Simplot property, and sparked my interest. I've been coming to Idaho for many years as a visitor, and came up and determined that it was a real discovery, and hired some landmen, and we started buying leases. And that was in 2010.
And at a certain point, Snake River became a minority partner in the group that was pursuing development of Idaho, right?
Correct.
But you, when I say you, I mean you personally and Snake River, but you nevertheless stayed actively involved in the activities here and the decision making?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And in 2016, were you aware of the integration application that was being pursued for Section 14?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Do you recall, was there a permit to drill in place at that time for Section 14?
No, there was not.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your experience in other areas. As part of its, your experience with Wiser Brown and operations in other states, have you had experience with pooling or integration of mineral interests?
Yes, I have.
And in your experience, is pooling generally done once an area is pooled? Is it pooled for a particular well or just to develop the unit?
To develop the unit.
And as part of the integration application here, are you familiar with the forms of lease and joint operating agreement that were submitted as part of the integration application?
Yes, I am.
And just for reference, those are part of Snake River Exhibit, I believe it's A. Do you understand the forms of lease and joint operating agreement that were made, that were submitted as part of the application to contemplate the development of only a single well in the unit or multiple wells?
Multiple wells.
Is the form of lease that's included in Snake River's Exhibit A, that was used for the integration, is it limited by depth or pool?
No, it is not.
And the form of joint operating agreement that's included as part of the integration application, does it have provision for the development of only one well, or does the development of an initial well and additional wells?
Initial well and additional wells.
In the development in Idaho since 2010, have there been other spacing units in which multiple wells were drilled and produced?
Yes, there are a number of units with two wells, and there's one unit with three wells.
Spacing. Is that over in the Willow Field?
Yes, it is.
It, When Snake River applied for the permit to drill the Barlow 214 well, was it your understanding that the 2016 integration application would apply to that well?
Yes.
If you had been aware or had the understanding that the 2016 integration order did not apply to anything more than the existing Barlow 114 well, would you have applied for the permit to drill the Barlow 214 well?
No.
Why not?
Because we would have had to go. I don't know what the procedure would have been, but we wouldn't have had committed royalty owners, committed mineral interest owners.
And let's say you drilled a well in an area where there were uncommitted mineral interest owners. What would the effect of that be?
Essentially, we'd be carrying those people. So say, for instance, if 25% of them were uncommitted, then we would own 75% of the well. And we would carry them. They get what we call a free ride.
So they would get 25% of the revenue from the well free of cost.
Correct.
So as an economic matter, would you ever do that?
Nope.
Is it your experience elsewhere where you, through Wiser Brown, have operated to have every well in an area be subject to a separate integration or pooling application and proceeding?
In my 40-plus years of experience, I have yet to see a case where it worked that way. It always provides for additional wells.
And what would be the effect to you as an operator of having to go through an integration application and hearing process for every well in an area?
It would be terrible. It would be very uneconomic. Legal costs would be incredibly high, which, just again and again and again to do the same thing for each additional well, it wouldn't promote the business.
I don't think I have any other questions for you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Piotrowski, do you have any questions for Mr. Brown?
I do. Mr. Brown, you indicated you're the owner of Wiser Brown Oil, is that right?
My family owns 50% and the Wisers own 50%.
Okay. And is that a corporation or an LLC, or how's that organized?
General partnership.
General partnership. So the Brown family is on the hook for half of that company's liability? Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And in 2016, was Wiser Brown Oil involved at all in the integration application on Section 14?
No. Yes, we were I'm sorry?
I think that was somebody accidentally speaking. So the question is,
go ahead.
Yeah, the question was Wiser Brown involved in the 2016 integration application on Section 14?
Wiser Brown owned owned leasehold interest in the block. Yes, they were.
And at the time was – I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Alta Mesa was the operator at that time. They represented the rights of the leasehold owners.
And so at that time, if Alta Mesa is the operator, would Wiser Brown have had any liability for any mistakes that were made in the drilling or operating of that well?
Uh,
that well has a joint operating agreement that covers that subject, and we were a party to that joint operating agreement.
Weiser Brown, I understand, is also one of the owners of Snake River Oil and Gas. Is that correct?
Weiser Brown. Go ahead, Mike. Did somebody?
No, you're good, Richard.
Weiser Brown owns Snake River.
Entirely? Are you the sole owner?
Yes. Yes, Weiser Brown owns okay. Snake River entirely.
And so there are, I understand at one point there were other partners in that venture. Have those partners sold out? Or is my understanding wrong?
Say the last part of that again.
I mean, was my understanding wrong that Snake River Oil and Gas was a joint venture with multiple partners at one point?
Snake River represents as the operator, just as so Alta Mesa, as I think everybody knows, Alta Mesa sold part of their interest, and then they went bankrupt, and we acquired the balance. But Weiser Brown is now Snake River is now the operator and represents a partner group as operator.
Okay.
Weiser Brown owns Snake River.
And so do the other members of this group you mentioned, are they involved at all in the operation of any of the Alta Mesa or AMI wells that were purchased or other interests that were purchased?
I'm going to object at this point that this is outside the scope and not relevant.
Yes, and I would agree if you could ask your next question, Mr. Piotrowski.
Mr. Brown, who's going to be responsible if the Barlow 214 well goes badly and contaminates the groundwater in that section?
Same objection.
Okay. This one I'll allow.
I think it's a relevant question.
Yeah, and I agree with Mr. Piotrowski. I'll allow it.
Snake River is the operator and will be responsible. That's what an operator does under a JOA. It represents a partner group.
Mr. Brown, have you ever in your extensive experience in the industry run into a situation where under the same tract of land, whether it's a section or some other descriptor, there is more than one commodity? For instance, have you ever run into a situation where there is both natural gas and crude oil under the same property?
Yes.
And do natural gas and crude oil, do those reserves command the exact same level of royalties in every market you're aware of?
That's objection. It's an incomplete hypothetical, and it's not relevant.
Mr. Piotrowski, want to try asking that a different way?
Sure. Mr. Brown, do you understand that the integration agreement or integration order provides for a royalty of 1/8 to the mineral holders in Section 14?
Correct.
And what will you do if in the course of developing that property, you discover a mineral resource that is worth, on the open market, much more than a 1/8 royalty?
Objection, it's an incomplete hypothetical, and it's not relevant.
I believe it's a complete hypothetical, and I believe it is relevant to what we should do with this integration order.
Okay. Could you expand a little bit on that, Mr. Piotrowski, of just explaining how it relates
sure.
to the integration order?
Mr. Brown, am I correct that you believe, as one of the owners of the operating company, that even if you found gold underneath that property, you'd be entitled to drill for it if you could under this integration order?
Uh,
I don't know how to answer that question. I'm not in the hard mining industry.
Let me come at it from a different direction then. What is the most valuable commodity that can be extracted in the United States by drilling? I'm just trying to come up with an example that'll make sense for this question.
I don't know what it has to do with whether the integration order applies to the well. That's the scope of this proceeding, Mr. Hearing Officer.
Yeah, and I would have to agree. I mean, I go by IDAPA 04110160, and the basic spirit of that rule is that evidence should be taken to develop the record and not excluded to frustrate development. However, you know, as a hearing officer, I can exclude evidence that is irrelevant and duly repetitious or inadmissible or constitutional. As I've said, I like to give the parties a chance to say what they need to say, and sometimes as a hearing officer, you know, I don't know if it's relevant or not until the issue has fully been explored and questions have been asked and answered. I'm trying to see the relevance, Mr. Piotrowski. I want to give you your chance, but I'm not quite seeing it. I'll give you another shot to ask it a different way, but up until now, it seems like a bit outside the scope.
Okay. Mr. Brown, you've got a lot of experience in this field. Would you agree with me that a mineral owner whose mineral rights include sweet light crude oil will generally get a higher royalty rate than somebody who owns mineral rights that consist solely of natural gas?
I don't agree with what you just said.
Okay. So you think that do you agree with me that some commodities have different royalty rates than others in the oil and gas industry?
My experience is we don't pay different royalties for, if you're trying to ask if we pay different royalties for gas than oil or condensate, for example, we do not. We have a set royalty rate in the lease, and it doesn't waver between commodities.
When you're entering a lease, when you're negotiating to enter into a lease, does the royalty rate you negotiate for, does that depend on the commodity?
In my 40-plus years of experience in the industry, I have not taken or negotiated a lease where the royalty changed based on product.
That wasn't the question I asked, sir. If you're negotiating a lease with somebody who owns what you suspect is going to be natural gas condensate, will you negotiate this exact same royalty you would if you suspected that their mineral rights included a different or was consisted solely of a different commodity? Do different commodities get different rates when you're negotiating the first lease on a piece of property?
Larry Vaughn
has left.
And you may answer the question, Mr. Brown. It sounds like one of our witnesses just left the hearing.
Okay. Ask the question one more time.
Sure. Let me put it this way. If you showed up at my house and you knew that I had crude oil under my property, would you offer me the exact same royalty rate that you would if you showed up at my house knowing that there was only natural gas under my property?
I have no experience. I have not in my career changed my royalty rate based on what product I thought I was going to find.
And so you pay a 1/8 royalty rate. Oh, sorry, sir.
No, I said what I was going to say.
Okay. So you pay a 1/8 royalty rate regardless of what commodity you're drilling for.
Hmm. the rural
is that correct?
Wildcat area, which this is.
That's not the question I asked, sir.
So I think I answered
the question I asked is, have you ever paid royalty rate other than 1/8 for any commodity?
Asked an answer.
I'm sorry, Mike.
I asserted an objection that it's been asked and answered.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that we need to move on here.
Okay. So, Mr. Brown, my next question then is, do you think the 1/8 royalty rate provided by the integration order is the only reasonable rate that could be applied here?
It was the royalty rate. It was approved by the director of the commission.
Okay. And so no other royalty rate should even be considered?
I'm
is that your position?
Not sure I'm following. I'm not sure what you want me to say.
Well, what I'd like you to do, sir, is admit that you will pay higher royalty rates on different commodities.
I don't pay higher royalty rates on different commodities. I just told you in my entire 40-plus year career, I have not done that.
Okay. So we will always find that for Snake River Oil and Gas and Weezer Brown, the royalty rate is always 1/8, no matter what you're drilling for.
Not what I said.
Okay, sir. What royalty rates will we find in the leases held by Weezer Brown?
Objection, relevance.
Yeah, and I tend to...
Mr. Hearing Officer, Mr. Hearing Officer, integration order establishes a royalty rate. That royalty rate was based in part on what a now bankrupt company told the Department of Lands was the commodity under that. Mr. Brown, who wasn't a party to that proceeding, is now claiming he has the right to drill as many wells as he can get the state to approve and go after any commodity that lies under that land and only pay a 1/8 royalty rate, regardless of whether that commodity might be worth a 1/4 royalty rate or a 20 or a 50% royalty rate. This is relevant because he brought up the point that he considers not unleased property to be economic free riders. And I suggest that Snake River Oil and Gas is an economic free rider that wants to drill more wells that might be more valuable that are taking other people's property, and he doesn't want to pay for it at a commercially reasonable rate. And that's why he wants to have the old integration order. And so my questions are designed to elicit the facts that would allow you to determine if that, in fact, is the case here.
Okay. Well, with that being said, I'll allow it. Go ahead and answer the question, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Hearing Officer, can I ask a question in aid of an objection?
Yes.
It's not clear to me what area Mr. Piotrowski's question refers to. Is he talking about any lease that Mr. Brown or Weiser Brown or Snake River has taken anywhere in the universe? Or is he talking about...
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Then my objection is the question is irrelevant because lease rates vary based on acreages that are being leased, the area of the country you're leasing in, and other factors that have nothing to do with what you're suggesting. So my objection is...
Well, if we could do a...
The question is overly broad and irrelevant.
If we could come to a stipulation that lease royalty rates vary based on the commodity that's found, the quality of that commodity as it's found, and other factors. If we can stipulate to that, that's fine, and I don't have to ask any more questions about this.
We can't stipulate to that in Idaho. Mr. Brown has already testified that he doesn't vary royalty rates by commodity.
Okay, so that leads to my next question. I'm trying to test. Then that leads to my next question, which was, if we search the records of Weezer Brown, will we find that you only pay a 1/8 royalty every single time?
And that is just in Idaho, or that's anywhere?
Let's start with Idaho.
Again, Mr. Herrmaster, it's not clear to me how this relates to whether the existing integration order by its terms covers this well. He may disagree that it's with whether he thinks it's fair or not, but that's not the question in this case. The question in this case is, does the integration order by its terms, does it cover this well? He basically, what he wants is for Mr. Brown to testify to trade secrets and other things for his own benefit. It doesn't have anything to do with the question.
And I disagree. I think the position of the state of Idaho is that we should try to make this fair. I know Mr. Christian disagrees with that. He just said so. But I believe, Mr. Herrmaster, that the goal of this proceeding and any proceeding by the Department of Lands is to achieve fairness for the citizens of Idaho. We can't always do it, but we should at least be trying.
Well, you can give a speech about that all you want, but the statement of the purpose of the hearing is one sentence long, and it says, does the integration order apply to the well? Period. That's my
Mr. Herrmaster, I think that if the testimony about economic free riders is in the record, I am entitled to ask these questions. We can strike that testimony, and you can agree to not rely on it at all, and I'll move on. But if that testimony is there, I'm allowed to explore it.
Okay. Well, I would say that we can strike that testimony regarding the free riders, because to me that's a bit out of scope to the issue that we're deciding. Let's momentarily, Ms. Vega, did you have any input on this? Did you, in terms of how the integration order applies and the recent line of questioning? It's okay if you don't, but.
Sure, thank you.
Mel, person.
Has left.
Oh.
Go ahead, Ms. Vega. Another witness.
Yeah. Right. I guess the input that I would offer is that in an integration proceeding in 2016 as well as today, the Idaho legislature has passed minimum standards for integrated property owners. And while I can't say that I've read every lease that was integrated or part of that integration proceeding was a standard lease that was reviewed, discussed, and accepted.
I need to object. I'm sorry to interrupt, Ms. Vega, but I need to object because I think you're going beyond providing merely the department's legal position, and I think that you just became a participant in this proceeding, which is inappropriate because you represent the regulator.
Well, Mr. Shana is attempting to answer your question. If you believe I've gone off base from your question, I'm happy to recenter myself. So perhaps you could provide direction.
Okay. No, that's okay. You know, I mean, basically, counsel for Snake River and for Kaya, you know, are both heavily invested in this question, it seems, or to object to the question. You know, I'll just tell the parties that as a hearing officer, when I'm writing the recommended order for this, I decide what's relevant, what's irrelevant to the issue at hand based on the rules and regs that govern the issue at hand. And so, as I've said many times, you know, I like the chance for parties to say what they need to say. When it comes to cross-examination of witnesses, you know, it applies to a point. And when it comes down to a judgment call, I basically like to allow stuff rather than exclude stuff. So with that in mind, you know, I'll direct Mr. Piotrowski to ask the question that you're asking. But keep in mind, the issue at hand in this hearing is whether the integration order applies to the Barlow 2-14 well. So with that in mind,
I'll try to narrow my question as much as I can.
Okay, thank you. So let's go ahead and proceed and ask your question. Mr. Piotrowski and Mr. Brown, answer the question the best that you can.
Mr. Brown, if we were to examine the leases held by Weezer Brown or Snake River Oil and Gas to lease mineral rights from Idaho owners, would we find that every single one of those leases offers no more than a 1/8 royalty.
No, you would not.
In this particular case involving this integration order, the Bartles, what was originally for the Bartles 114, but the Section 14 integration order, we can call it, it provided for a bonus payment of, I believe it was $100 an acre. If we were to examine all of the leases entered into by Weezer Brown or Snake River Oil and Gas for mineral rights, the lease mineral rights in the state of Idaho, would we find that every one of those offered a $100 per acre bonus payment and no other amount?
Quite a few of them were less than $100. None.
Okay.
I don't recall. I mean, I as I recall.
And under the current integration order, regardless of what is eventually found under Section 14, the royalty rate would not change if the current integration order applies to an additional well, correct?
Can you ask your question again?
Sure. Let me ask it slightly differently. Whether you're obtaining petrochemicals from the Bartles 114 or the future Bartles 214 or some hypothetical Bartles 314, no matter which of those wells you are able to extract hydrocarbons from, the amount that Snake River Oil and Gas will pay in royalties will be 1/8 and no other amount as things stand today, right?
Royalties remain the same.
So in terms of this particular section and the risk of potential free riders, let me ask, so far to date, in Section 14, how much in royalties has Snake River Oil and Gas paid to the mineral rights holders? Roughly, I don't need a precise amount.
I'm sorry, can you, so you were asking how much in royalties have been paid from the Bartles to date?
In Section 14 for the people subject to this, or to the mineral holders subject to this integration order, how much royalties have been paid out to them so far?
We are getting out division orders as we speak, so we're getting out first checks as we speak. So as to the exact dollars, I can't tell you, but the well went on right around Christmas, and we're getting out. We got out some checks here in the last 10 days, and we'll get out the balance in the next 30.
Can you tell me roughly what the total will be for this whole round of checks within the last 10 days, including the next 30?
I would be guessing, but I can get that.
Okay. You don't have a sense as you sit here as to what the total royalty payments are going to come to for this round?
We just paid for, I think we produced for 5 days in December and January. So I'd rather get a good number than guess.
Okay. And that's really what I'm asking. Can you do, as you sit here right now without looking anything up, can you give me any better than a guess, or is a guess the best you could do? Because I'm not asking for guesses. Let me put the question a little differently. If all you can do is guess, and I'm not asking you to guess, but if you can give me a reasonable estimate, or are you able, would you be able to give a reasonable estimate, or do you just not have that information right now?
If I guess, then yeah. I'd rather give you a good number.
Okay. So any number you gave me right now would be nothing but a guess. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay, then I'm not going to ask you to guess at this point. But other than this current round, were there any prior royalty payments that went out in the Barlow section?
No.
Okay. Now, Snake River Oil and Gas is the current operator in that section, right?
Correct.
And when did SROG become the operator for this section?
I believe end of January 2020. And it was approved by the state, and somebody from IDL can correct me, but I think it was approved by the state within 30 days thereafter, approximately.
Okay. But that was the first time that Snake River Oil and Gas was the operator as opposed to just a leaseholder in this section, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's all the questions I have.
All right, Mr. Christian, did you have any follow-ups for Mr. Brown?
No, I do not.
Okay. All right, so we're an hour and a half into this hearing. Before you call your next witness, Mr. Christian, does anyone need a break?
Mr. Hearing Officer, I could use a break, but I'm not going to call any more witnesses.
Okay. Okay, and yeah, so let's go ahead and take a break then, if that's okay. By my clock, it's 2:32. Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break and reconvene at 2:42. And I'm just going to have all the parties on hold. I'll take them off hold. So you can just keep your line open, and everyone will be on hold, and we'll reconvene in 10 minutes.
Has left.
James Pietrowski
has left.
Michael Christian
has left.
Okay, I've taken everyone off hold, and so we're back on the record here. Just want to make sure everyone has rejoined us. I know some folks disconnected and called back in, which is fine. Mr. Christian, are you back on the line?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Piotrowski, are you back on the line?
I am.
And then, I'm sorry, someone else dropped off, but called back in if you could just identify yourself. Is that you, Mr. Brown?
Yes. Richard dropped and came back.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So, continuing on, Mr. Christian said he does not intend to call any more witnesses. Mr. Christian, do you have anything else to say at this time, or are you going to wait for closing arguments?
I'll wait for closing arguments. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me go back to Ms. Vega. Did you have anything to say at this time for Department of Lands?
Thank you, Mr. Strawn. The department does not have any direct examination of either Mr. Thomas or Mr. Thumb that we feel the need to offer you. However, both of them are available to answer any questions that you may have. Additionally, if any other party had questions regarding IDL's Exhibit 1, I believe the rules offer every party the opportunity to ask those questions. So they are prepared to be sworn in and participate as witnesses if necessary.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Piotrowski, did you have any questions for either Mick Thomas or James Thumb?
No, I assume, Mr. Hearing Officer, you're going to admit IDL Exhibit 1. Okay, then no, I don't have any questions. But,
okay. Mr. Christian, did you have any questions for either Mick Thomas or James Thumb?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Well, with that being said, then, I think we can move to closing arguments if the parties are ready.
I did want to point out just one thing. There, in the question of Mr. Brown, there was some questions about the department's approval of the switch from Alta Mesa to Snake River Oil and Gas as the operator, and the timeline or the factual timeline presented in Exhibit 1 does cover that. So that information is in the record.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Vega. Was there anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. So, Mr. Piotrowski, I was going to you if you're ready to present your closing argument at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. As I said at the beginning of this proceeding, the law has changed over the course of the events giving rise to this hearing. In 2016, under an earlier version of the statute, a proceeding was held at which one of the explicit goals was to determine just whether the proposed terms of lease were just and reasonable. The terms just and reasonable as applied under this statutory system have never been defined. And so individuals like the clients I represent and the witnesses that we called were left to decide whether to participate in a proceeding that they had never experienced before, that they had no idea what legal standards would be applied, and to address a document or a set of documents that, frankly, they did not understand. And at the end of that proceeding, the state of Idaho assigned their mineral rights to another party. We have already addressed this in the United States District Court for the District of Idaho, who found that precise procedure was insufficient to meet the commands of the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution as applied to states through the 14th Amendment. The same problem exists here today and is made even more clear. In 2016, certainly the implied promise and awfully darn close to the express promise of the statutory system as it existed then, was that explorers seeking oil and gas resources in the state of Idaho would seek a spacing order and an integration order and a drilling permit for one well per section. That was the assumption of the statute. And so even if the mineral owners had been entirely aware of their legal rights and what the meaning of just and reasonable terms, not that they could have been, because that term is still undefined, but even if they had been aware, they might well have chosen not to participate in a proceeding to address the Barlow 114 well. Instead, what actually happened was that the Department of Lands and the Oil and Gas Commission approved an integration order that didn't address a well in Section 14, but instead, according to Snake River Oil and Gas, it actually allowed as many wells as they can get the state to approve, and allows the operator, Snake River Oil and Gas, to take all of the hydrocarbons they can ever find under that property without ever having to again address whether the terms that, under which they are taking those minerals are just and reasonable. That is contrary to law. And while the statute at the time seems to have allowed that, and the regulations at the time seem to have allowed that, and the order entered at the time seems to have allowed that, the task falling to you, Mr. Hearing Officer, is to decide, is that what the law actually requires today, in 2021, with the knowledge we now have? And I suggest that the answer is no. And it is no for many reasons. First, doing so, allowing this integration order to essentially sell off all of the mineral rights of property owners in Idaho in Section 14, in the Barlow section, allowing that integration order to sell off all of their mineral rights would go well beyond the scope of what was noticed in 2016. Nobody told these mineral rights holders, hey, we are taking everything. And yet that is precisely what Snake River Oil and Gas now argues they're entitled to do. So the reasonable expectations of a reasonably well-informed mineral rights owner in 2016 would have been that there is going to be a well. We now call it the Barlow 114, but there is going to be a well. It is going to drill, and Snake River Oil and Gas is going to get to extract and sell and then provide a royalty for everything it can get out of that well. And so far as we know, they still plan to do that. But it is not reasonable, and it was not a matter of law at the time, that the immigration order would sell all of the mineral rights under this section to Snake River Oil and Gas. I mean, first of all, Snake River Oil and Gas wasn't involved at the time. But furthermore, that was not the notice that the property owners were given. So as a matter of reasonable expectations from that proceeding, it should apply to that well. And although it would be, it may be acceptable to find an alternative procedure other than an entire new integration process, it is not appropriate to say there will be no procedure whatsoever. So the reasonable expectations of the parties here were that there would be a limit on what Snake River Oil and Gas could do. Now, Snake River Oil and Gas, of course, is going to argue that their reasonable expectations should also be accounted for. But I think you should discount those, frankly. This is a company that has the gall to come before you and tell you they are concerned about economic free riders, even though they haven't paid a dime in royalties. 6 years later since this process started, and there hasn't been a royalty payment. And they are complaining to you that, oh boy, we'd never do this if we knew there were going to be economic free riders. The economic free rider in this situation is Snake River Oil and Gas. They paid Alta Mesa, Idaho. They paid some fees to the state, Presumably, the company pays Mr. Brown in some form or fashion, but they haven't paid the people who actually own the oil and gas. So that gets us to the next point, which is that beyond the reasonable expectations of the parties is the simple reality that as a matter of law, this integration order hasn't been invalidated, but should be invalidated. And if it can't be invalidated, it should, at the very least, not be extended beyond the one well that was the only well discussed, raised, mentioned, talked about during that procedure back in 2015 and 2016. There is no evidence in this record that indicates that anyone ever said to anyone else, we're going to drill 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 wells in Section 14. What AMI did when they submitted their application, when Mr. Christian submitted their application for them, was they indicated they wanted to drill a well. So if the integration order approved a lease that allows Sacred Oil and Gas to drill as many wells as they want or that they can get permits for, then what we have is a disconnect between the application and the order that was entered. And the order that extends beyond the scope of the application should be rejected. In fact, the order should be interpreted within the scope of that application, and that application never made any mention of any more than a well, the one we now know as the Barlow 114. Finally, although it is not your job to determine what is and is not a valid statute, and I am not asking you to invalidate a statute, it is the job of the hearing officer to determine, does this particular application of the statute violate the law? And in this case, you are asked, does the existing integration order apply to this second well? And we are suggesting that if the application of this integration order to the second well would violate the law, then the answer to the question should be no. And that's exactly what we are saying. It is well established as a matter of law across the United States, as a matter of federal law, that you cannot deprive owners of life, liberty, or property, property being the relevant aspect in this case, substantive rights such as property cannot be deprived, citizens cannot be deprived of their substantive rights except pursuant to constitutionally adequate procedures. And that's the decision of Cleveland Board of Education versus Loudermill, 470 U.S. 532. That requirement of due process applies to states through the 14th Amendment as clearly established in Dusenberry v. United States, 534 U.S. 161. To determine what process is due and thus what the state has to do in order for its integration order to be adequate as to the new well, the Supreme Court has said in Matthews v. Eldridge that you have to weigh the private interests that are affected by the official state action. You have to weigh the risk of an erroneous deprivation of property rights through those procedures used. And you have to weigh the government's interests, including the particular function involved and the fiscal and administrative burdens that additional or substitute requirement would entail. And again, this is all from Matthews v. Eldridge, 424 U.S. 319. This is pretty much boilerplate due process law. In this case, the procedure used didn't meet the, quote, fundamental requirement of due process, which is the opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful manner, end quote. Again, Matthews v. Eldridge. In 2016, nobody could be heard on whether a second well, the Barlow 214, was a good idea. Nobody had a meaningful opportunity to weigh in on that well and how it affected mineral rights. Nobody had a meaningful chance to be heard at a meaningful time in a meaningful manner in 2016 when nobody even knew that the Barlow 214 well was a possibility. And so to tell these property owners, we are taking your mineral rights and we are giving them to Snake River Oil and Gas, when meaningful manner is simply unlawful. And that doesn't mean the statute is unlawful. That means in this particular case, it's unlawful. The hearing officer should find that the reasonable expectations of the parties are not being met in this case by the person. Well, would violate due process of law under both the U.S. and Idaho constitutions. And the recommended order in this case should be that a new integration process should be undertaken where the appropriate entity can determine whether the terms of the integration order and the terms of the lease, which these property owners are forced into against their will, whether those terms are just and reasonable. That's what the statute requires, and that's what should be done in this case. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Piotrowski. Mr. Christian, if you would like
yes.
to give closing arguments this time.
Thank you. Thank you. The scope of this contested case, as I've said in today's hearing, is very specific and narrow. It is whether the 2016 integration order applies to the Barlow 214 well for which the commission has granted the permit to drill. This case, as defined by the commission's order initiating it, is not about whether the Barlow well or any other well is good or bad or should not be drilled. The commission has already permitted and then determined that it is appropriate that it be drilled. The case is not about whether Snake River is good or bad. It is not about whether integration is good or bad. It is not about whether the terms and conditions of the 2016 integration order are good or bad, or whether that proceeding was good or bad. Although I will note that Mr. Piotrowski's clients who testified each acknowledged that despite the opportunity to participate in the proceeding, they chose not to and waived any right they may have to participate. This case is not about whether, because of the passage of time, another integration proceeding should take place as a matter of opinion or morality or policy so that various people can participate or voice additional opinions. It is about, and only about, exactly what the commission said in its notice initiating the case, to determine whether the integration order in docket number CC2016 OGR01001 applies to the permitted proposed Barlow 214 well. Snake River obviously understood, and Mr. Brown confirmed that in his testimony, that the 2016 integration order applied to the Barlow 214 well. Otherwise, it would have been pointless for it to apply for the drilling permit. It would not choose to drill a well in an unintegrated unit with a substantial uncommitted interest. It would be uneconomic to do so. However, as is set forth at length in my motion within briefing which you have, you can determine whether the integration order applies to the Barlow 214 well by reference to the order itself, the statute, and the commission's order granting Snake River the drilling permit for the Barlow 214 well. First question is whether the integration statute limits an integration's order's coverage to one well. I submit to you, and I have briefed it extensively, that it does not. Spacing with which integration dovetails does not, contrary to Mr. Piotrowski's assertion, limit one to one well per spacing unit. In fact, the statute now and the rule then referred to limitations by well per common source of supply. If only one well, the statute as it existed in 2016 contains a number of statements indicating that it contemplates that multiple wells may be drilled in a unit.
There is some suggestion that the reference to a well in the spacing order authorizing a well imposes a limitation, but really it would have to say the well everywhere else, and the statute does not. The statute as it existed in 2016 and 47.322 in subsection A provided that the department shall order the integration of all tracts and or interest in the spacing unit for the drilling of a well or wells, development and operation thereof, and for the sharing of production thereof. So the statute already contemplated multiple wells could be drilled in an integrated unit. Subsection A went on further to that provide that as a part of an order establishing spacing units, the department may prescribe terms and conditions under which royalty interests shall, in the absence of voluntary agreement, be deemed to be integrated without the necessity of a subsequent separate order integrating the royalty interest. This also contains no limitation to a single well. Likewise, subsection B of 47.322 provided that all operations, including the drilling or operation of a well upon any portion of a spacing unit for which an integration order has been entered, shall be deemed for all purposes the conduct of such operations on each separately owned tract in the spacing unit. Again, this language is unlimited. The statute does not say operations of the single permitted well shall be deemed operations of all tracts in the unit. It says all operations on any portion of the integrated spacing unit. Even subsection C provided for the designation of an operator for the integrated unit, not an operator for the well. If the statute were intended to limit integration orders coverage to a single well, it would not provide the designation of an operator for the unit without limitation. So everywhere in every subsection of the statute where it refers to a well, it can only be interpreted to mean any well which is drilled in the integrated unit, not the only well which may be drilled in the integrated unit. Interpreting A to mean the would be contrary to the plain meaning of A and contrary to all of the other parts of the statute. And these problems preclude the interpretation that would limit an integration order to a single well, unless it specifically said so, before we even get to the relevant orders, specifically the 2016 integration order and the commission's order granting Snake River a drilling permit for the Barlow, 214. So second, we get to the 2016 integration order, which is the subject of the contested case. The integration order is consistent with the statute, in particular, in conclusion of Law 7, which is on page 10 of the order, the director stated, the director concludes it is appropriate to integrate the uncommitted mineral interest owners, the applicants of name, for the development and operation of the unit pursuant to Idaho Code 47.322. The director did not conclude that it was appropriate to integrate a portion of the mineral interest or to integrate them for the development of a single well. The director then ordered at the conclusion of the 2016 order that the applicant, quote, is designated operator of each well to be drilled within each respective spacing unit and has the exclusive right to drill, equip, and operate each well within each respective spacing unit. This is not limited to a single well within each unit. Again, for it to be so limited, the order would have had to say the well to be drilled within each respective spacing unit, not each well to be drilled within each respective spacing unit. Each does not mean the. The director further ordered that all production from the spacing unit, quote, be integrated and allocated among the interest owners according to their acreage in the unit, and that all royalty interest in the spacing unit shall, in the absence of any voluntary agreement, be deemed to be integrated as of the date of the above captioned integration orders without the necessity of any subsequent separate order. All of this language indicates that the applicant was designated the operator of the unit for all development, that an initial well was approved, and that the operator may apply for permits to drill additional wells, which is what happened. The director also approved forms of lease and joint operating agreement at both, which are in Snake River Exhibit A, details of which are set out at length in my briefing, but both of which clearly contemplate the drilling and production of multiple wells in the integrated unit. I refer you to the discussion in my briefing, but the joint operating agreement provides for an initial well and then proposals for subsequent wells. the form of lease is for a geographic area, not for a stratigraphic area, by which I mean a particular depth or pool associated with the initial well. All of this is consistent with the terms of both the statute and the order. Lastly, we get to the commission statements in its order granting Snake River the permit to drill the Barlow 214 well. In overturning the initial denial of the drilling permit for the Barlow 214, the commission made a number of statements that can only have been made if it understood the well was subject to the 2016 integration order. First, the department had denied the permit to drill in part because it concluded that the well might violate correlative rights. In rejecting this, the commission stated, the well allows the mineral owners within Section 14 the opportunity to produce the well and recover their interest in oil and gas, and that the well would allow, quote, production of a just and equitable share of oil and gas without waste. The commission could only make these statements if production was allocated across all of the tracts in the unit. This could only happen if the well is covered under the 2016 integration order. So it's pretty clear that at the time the commission issued the order granting the permit to drill the Barlow 214, it understood and stated clearly that the 2016 integration order covered the well. I presented you with additional testimony from Mr. Brown that the idea that every single well should be the subject of a separate integration application is not the norm. It's not the way he or Weiser Brown have done business in the many other states in which they've been operators. And interpreting the Idaho statute in that fashion would put it at odds with the rest of the producing world. I'm not going to get into the details of Mr. Piotrowski's argument other than to say he is clearly attempting to relitigate the 2016 integration proceedings in the face of his own clients having acknowledged that they decided not to participate in it. And I take issue with the statement that you are, I think the term he used, allowing this integration order to do anything. The integration order either does or does not, by its terms and the terms of the statute, apply to the well. You are simply acknowledging, assuming you decide what I believe to be correctly, that the statute, the terms of the statute, and the terms of the order make it clear that the 2016 order covers the Barlow 214 well. Mr. Piotrowski engaged in a lengthy discussion of the party's reasonable expectations, and none of that is relevant to whether the order does or does not cover the well. And the last point I'll make is Mr. Brown clearly testified that initial royalty payments from new production from the Barlow 114 well had been made. Mr. Piotrowski asserted that nobody's been paid anything, which is just flatly false. It doesn't have anything to do, again, with whether the 2016 integration order covers the Barlow 214 well to be drilled, but it's just simply incorrect. So based on the content of the statute as it existed at the time, and the content of the order and the content of the commission's order granting the drilling permit for the Barlow 214 well, I would ask you to issue an order declaring that the 2016 integration order does in fact apply to the Barlow 214 well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Christian. Mr. Piotrowski, anything further that you wanted to say?
Yes, thank you. Briefly, Mr. Christian has now said several times he doesn't believe this is about fairness. He doesn't believe it's about morality. I noticed that we've got quite an audience here, including representatives of the governor's office, public relations experts, citizens who are concerned. I would like to tell all of them, and I would like you, sir, Mr. Harry Officer, to tell all of them, we care in Idaho about fairness and about morality.
And a legal argument that starts with, it doesn't matter if it's immoral, should be automatically deemed a failure of an argument in Idaho. You are asked a narrow question. The narrow question is, will the existing integration order govern the operation of the Barlow 214 well? If you conclude that it will, then you are saying that a procedure in 2016, which nobody understood, which nobody knew would apply to this well, which nobody even had ever been through before, will govern how Idahoans are forced to sell their property, not asked, forced to sell their property. And I submit to you, sir, that in Idaho, especially when we're talking about property, what happens in other states, what other people do about property rights, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we will be at odds with other states. What matters is, here in Idaho, we should do what's fair, we should do what's moral. In this case, the question is, does the integration order control these operations? That question, contrary to Mr. Christian's statement, is not so abundantly clear. Mick Thomas, literally the expert in this field on these matters in Idaho, disagreed. Mick Thomas would have denied the Barlow 214 well precisely because how it affected correlative rights and how correlative rights would apply to it wasn't clear. He wasn't taking my position, that's certainly true. He was saying it wasn't clear. He would have denied that well permit on that basis. So to argue that it's clear because the commission said it was clear ignores their own expert who disagreed on that point. Now, you are not asked to decide whether Mr. Thomas was right or wrong. He has not testified at this proceeding.
Okay.
And you are not asked to determine whether Mr. Thomas was right or wrong. I merely point out that the idea that this is clear and simple and there's no possible room for disagreement flies in the face of the reality of why this proceeding was ordered in the first place. So, Mr. Hirayasu, your job is to determine what do you recommend that the Oil and Gas Commission do going forward? The precise question presented to you was put a little bit differently. But as we in the law know, the precise question is offered in a context. And in this context, it clearly is indicative of a desire from the Oil and Gas Commission to get your expert opinion on this. The fact is, nobody anticipated this in 2016. And to suggest that what happened in 2016 now forever binds the owners of those properties is not a reasonable outcome and is not an outcome you should recommend to the Oil and Gas Commission. Instead, you should recommend to them that consistent with well-established existing law, a new integration proceeding should be undertaken before Mr. Brown drills his well. We are not asking him to drill a well where he doesn't have integration. We are asking him to wait until the integration is full and has been fully addressed before he begins drilling. That's a fair outcome, and as it so happens, that's the moral outcome in this case. I would close by pointing out I do not intend, unless the hearing officer explicitly asks for it, I do not intend to offer any briefing in opposition to the motion for summary ruling. We would offer the evidence and argument made today as our opposition to that motion.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Piotrowski, and I'm not asking for briefing from any party unless they want to. So, and at this point, I don't expect any. All right. Mr. Christian, did you have any follow-ups?
Mr. Herring, officer, at the risk of belaboring it, I will simply say that Mr. Piotrowski's arguments are almost entirely based on
Richard
the
Brown
relative-
has left.
That correlative rights flow in one direction. And, of course, correlative rights are defined in the statute, and you can refer to them. And the point is, correlative rights means the rights of all parties involved. And
That includes the rights of the operator, and it includes the rights of those mineral interest owners who have voluntarily leased and want to develop their minerals, which in this case is the vast majority of the mineral interest in the unit. The model which Mr. Piotrowski proposes ignores both of them. The delays that have been caused to date continue to cause Snake River enormous damage. And those mineral interest owners who want to develop their minerals and who have been waiting for additional development to occur. So if you want to talk about context, context needs to be seen in view of the definition of correlative rights in the statute. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Ms. Vega from Department of Lands, anything you would like to say on behalf of the department at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Strawn. No, the department has no closing statements today.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. So I mentioned at the outset of this hearing is that there is a conference line that people have called in to both to listen to.
Mr. Brown
has joined.
Okay. And it sounds like Mr. Brown just line dropped and he called back in, which is fine. So I was saying I mentioned at the outset of this hearing that the conference line was available because of our potential limit on ports of our teleconference ability here. And so I've had that conference line muted. We did receive public comments as part of this case, and that's on the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission website. And so I have looked at some of those comments, not all. Some are for, some are against the integration order. But this is a public hearing, and so I'd like to open up the conference line. If there is any public comment, I will take that at this time with the caveat that this case will be decided regarding the arguments that were made as the law applies or does not apply to the issue at hand of whether the integration order of 2016 applied to the Barlow 2-14 well. So, let's see, Chris is from the department, and so I just unmuted that. So on the conference line, is there anything that anyone wants to say? Going once, going twice. Nope. Okay. So I'm re-muting the conference line, and we'll go ahead and conclude the hearing. And so my role at this point as the hearing officer is to issue a recommended order to the commission, and obviously we'll send that to all parties that were part of this contested case. And I expect to be able to submit the recommended order by the end of the month. I'll do so as quickly as I can, but obviously, there's a lot been said, all the written materials, and I will give this a thorough review and consideration of all the arguments that were expressed in this case. So, without further, belaboring of the procedural items, I think we can go ahead and conclude the hearing. I thank you everyone for your participation, and I'll go ahead and, disconnect everyone now, but you're free to disconnect on your own. So this hearing has concluded, and I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
Mick Thomas
has left.
Michael Christian
has left.